Hoops fans, how you doing? It's your boy Jonathan Macri with you for a fresh episode of NBA Takedown coming at you here on a Thursday at noon. And we have a treat because there are a lot of people putting out general NBA content about this league that we love. Most of it is shit. The person that I'm talking to right now is putting out absolutely fantastic content, both on his YouTube channel, which if you're watching this, I am sure you've seen something from it. Six Rings of Steel, or shall I say SRAS, because we are in the acronym game with Matthew Geist. How you doing, brother?
Good, Jonathan. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to kind of just talk for the next half an hour or so, just what's going on in this NBA landscape. I got to ask you, though, I know, like, as an avid Knicks fan yourself,
yes,
what's your kind of thoughts, opinions on the whole NBA Cup banner situation? I know you probably talked about it a ton, but it's
Bannergate. Get the name right. Bannergate. We are putting the gate on that sucker. My opinion is I don't really give a fuck. And yeah, as a content creator, I kind of have to give a little bit of a fuck, like an F you. Look, I suspect that this is a Dolan Adam Silver thing, which always does just, what's the opposite of the warm and fuzzies? That's what it's given me. But I just hope that this is something that 24 hours from now, no one's ever going to talk about again. And let's leave it at that. Yeah. Where were you at?
I was back like you, I didn't really care at the end of the day. And then you're just starting to see like the Billy Joel banners up there and the divisional crown. Cause I do wonder, cause the cup is so new. So I get everything behind it. Like, are we going to take it seriously and all that? I do wonder, like, in a couple of years, how do we value the cup? Do people care about it more than like a first round exit? Do you go as far as like it's a second round exit? Is it as much as like a divisional crown in some ways? So I do wonder what we're going to kind of land on for what the cup's value is to a team.
I went through this after the game. I was like, was this the equivalent of like where I think I landed on was like, you're up 2-0 in a first round series and you win game three. Mm-hmm. That's like kind of, which is, I may be belittling it significantly. I don't know because nobody knows because it's so new.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think we'll know for a couple of years, like what its true meaning is.
Yeah. Whatever. It was a fun thing. It's cool that the Knicks won a thing, even though it means they might lose to a thing called the Indiana Pacers tonight because they're going to have Trey Jemison starting at center for all we know. Mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about Trey Jemison today. We are going to talk about NBA trade values, which is one of my favorite topics. It's something that I thought of in the context of you because you put out these fantastic tweets every day or every – when do you actually send out your like things I like? Was it the morning after or at night?
Yeah, so I'll try to watch like 2 to 3 games at night, like really locking in, and then if there's a close fourth quarter. And then pretty much in the morning after, I'll try to rewatch the condensed games as much as I can and then kind of get my thoughts while I'm watching those.
So those tweets that you send out, it's very rare that something new comes along where I'm like, this is now has become part of my daily content diet. I have to check in with those tweets every day because you manage to get at the heart of all the most important stuff from the night before. And you also obviously comment on other stuff on social media, including like, what would this player get if the team X, you know, put them up for the trade? So that's what we're doing today. You know, trade value, a concept that Bill Simmons introduced to us many, many years ago when his hand still wrote or functioned. So we're going to do our respective top fives. So you are the guest. I will ask you, do you feel like you are the guest and you are a content creator? Do you think this is a list best served going 1 to 5, or do you want to go 5 up?
Let's go 5 up.
You want to go 5 up? That's always my default. And then Andrew Claudio periodically yells at me. He's like, no, this should be one down. I'm like, no, 5 up is more dramatic. So with that, I have my little piece of paper and now I'm going to get my sheet so I can keep track. We're high tech here. Give me your fifth most uncertain trade value guy in the NBA right now.
Okay. Because we kind of talked about like the six or so names, or maybe out of like six in my mind, the fifth guy I ended up going with was LaMelo Ball, because so we're saying that LaMelo Ball has like the most certainty out of the most uncertain guys, right? that's what number five is.
One could go with that. And I should have. This is great podcast producing. We discussed a bunch of guys. If you want to go outside of out of bounds on just the guys that we talked about, feel free. You're not bound to just like it's anyone on you want on your list.
Yeah. But, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I got basically. I'll put LaMelo here because I think LaMelo. Man, it's tough. Because there's so much uncertainty around LaMelo, and there's going to be that for all these guys as well. It's just the ankle injuries, the seriousness on the court, the consistency. But he has the youth. He's under contract. Would even Charlotte think about trading him in theory with Konkin Ipple's emergence? Does that make them more likely to be maybe aggressive at the deadline? Not like more so making a big splash, but trying to add to this core on the margins. Or does this team say, okay, we have Konkin Ipple now. Do we look to move in a different direction about somebody that might be a little bit more reliable for us future wise? I just also don't think many teams are lining up to trade for LaMelo Ball. I think for a lot of these teams, and maybe most with LaMelo, it's like, I don't know if desperate's the right word, but you're really taking a home run swing here for LaMelo, which he does have potential still with his offensive creation, his passing ability, able to just operate extremely well out of the pick and roll. It's just like you're throwing such a risk here, and I don't know if even any ownership would sign on board with it right now.
It's funny you phrase it like that. I don't know if any ownership. The thing that I struggled the most with doing my list was the concept, and I feel like I'm cursing a lot on this episode. You just must be bringing something out of me, is the it only takes one asshole concept. And if there is one team out there who you could say would look at LaMelo Ball and throw 2 unprotected first round picks at Charlotte plus a future unprotected swap. Just again, I'm making this up out of whole cloth about what this trade offer would be. Is that enough to put him high on the list when you would also consider the fact that, as you just said, most teams, most ownerships would probably not look at this guy as a guy that they would sign off on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%. It's just like he's 24 years old. This is his sixth year in the NBA. He hasn't played over like 50 games since 2022. And that was his best year when they made the play-in tournament.
Yep.
There's just so much risk in going and trading for LaMelo. And I don't know if we've had like something similar. I think it maybe, I just don't know if they would end up pulling the trigger because it's a smaller market. He's been their biggest star, arguably like popularity wise in franchise history. So I think you would have to overpay. But I think a lot of the guys we're going to talk about, the teams I think may value them more than what the open market would say that they're worth. Like you're expecting, okay, maybe we're getting like a Mikal Bridges type return, or we're getting like a really good Paul to set us up for the future. But I just don't think anybody's risking that for LaMelo at this point.
I completely agree. And where I ultimately landed on is if he does get moved, almost certainly some other person who is likely to show up on this list for us would probably be in the deal going back to Charlotte.
Yeah, for sure.
I did have him at number two on my list. I will say that because again, the concept of it only takes one, and the Kings are a team that exists in the NBA. They are still one of the 30 teams. Last I checked, I haven't been on Twitter since we started the show. Who is your number four?
Okay. So, this guy is probably maybe the most reliable guy we're going to talk about, but ironic enough, he is hurt right now. I have Domantas Sabonis here at number four.
He was my number three.
Okay. So we're kind of in line there. I mean, Sabonis is a very productive player offensively, and there's definitely things that open up the offensive game when he's out there as your main offensive hub, running DHOs with him. He's so physical around the glass. He can find guys in the corner, and you can honestly make an argument like he's been so productive in maybe not a functional environment, at least for the last like year and a half in Sacramento. Last year was kind of a disaster season. They trade Fox, they fire Mike Brown. He gets hurt late in the year and they don't make it out of the play-in tournament. Now this year it's been rocky with him. He's dealing with the knee injury, but you're getting one of the best offensive big men in the NBA that has his clear limitations as like a top guy on your team for what he could do in the clutch. And I think defensively, and he never really proved us otherwise in Sacramento, but he's under contract for the next 3 years. Out of all the guys we're talking about, I know he's hurt right now, but he's been the most reliable in terms of staying healthy on the court. Where I do wonder if you're looking to kind of re-identify your offensive scheme, do you make a push for Sabonis, who might be not worth as much as we thought like a year ago?
I completely agree, especially since a year ago, if you were so inclined, you could have looked at the 3-point percentage and be like, huh, okay, The number starts with a 4. The volume number starts with a 2. And I think there was a point and then a 0 after it. But the percentage number started with a 4. This season, obviously small sample size because he's been hurt for a while. That has come down closer to his career norms. So, like, but even with him shooting the threes last year, there was never any conversation about, oh, you know, maybe you could play him with another traditional 5, which is where I really struggle with, because I completely agree with you. You are getting this offensive hub at center, even one that does not shoot threes. But to me, the Sabonis question comes back to organizational goals. And if you're trading for this player at his salary, which is 42 this year, 45 and a half next year, and then 48.6, which is not like crazy in the grand scheme of things currently in the NBA. The efficiency hasn't been there this year. Again, small sample size. Like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to, like, not to use the overused term, but it's like, are you just trying to be in the play-in every year? Are you hoping for home court advantage? Is that your ceiling? And I just don't know how many teams are left out there like that. You know, that's why, again, I think I struggle with him.
No, totally. Cause like, you can make an argument that a team is willing to give up, I don't know, 90 cents on the dollar for Domantas Sabonis, cause they do think that you're getting at least the 3 years under control.
Yeah.
Like his last 3 prime years, and he's going to be a productive offensive player regardless, but I do think you have to have the defensive ecosystem in place to kind of offset his deficiencies there. Like, there's a couple teams that I can kind of see a vision with as well. I mean, you're thinking, like, is there a way for, like, Toronto, who I'm sure doesn't really love the extension at the moment with Jakob Poeltl, do they try to say, like, it's not going to cost us that much of future draft capital. We don't have to trade away, like, obviously a Colin Murray Boyles or maybe even a Jamal Shedd or anything like that. It's kind of matching salary and maybe a protected first. And we can really get, like, an offensive-minded guy who can – it's tough, too, because he likes to operate out of the high post, and that's kind of where Brandon Ingram likes to operate as well. But you have Scottie Barnes to help him out defensively. That was a team. Or the other one, I thought, like, they're kind of hitting the panic button. I don't know if they are yet, but, like, Cleveland – do they try to say that Evan Mobley and Domantas Sabonis could work out offensively because Evan Mobley can help him out defensively? Both can space the floor. Both can dominate maybe down low at times together. I wonder if that would be a team, but with the apron and stuff, it gets complicated.
Yeah, the Cleveland making any trades right now, it's going to be tough. But they're so interesting to me because, like, I was just talking to Fred Katz last week about the Cavs, and he was spent several days with them earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And they, like, told him then in, like, the beginning of October, like, look, this year's going to be different. We're trying to do some different stuff offensively. We both agree that what we're seeing right now, shout out to them losing to the freaking Bulls last night, like, that's not – this is not that, like, this is something worse. So how big is their panic button? Like, is it like a key on your laptop, or are we talking like the big, didn't like Homer Simpson have like a big
the red button? Yeah.
Yeah. Big,
that's like, don't press this.
Do not press this button. Yeah. I think that it might be growing to that extent. So yeah, he was number 3 for me. So you got LaMelo at 5, Sabonis at 4. Who is your number 3?
Okay, so I had one guy, but I kind of feel like we should talk about both of them. I don't know who you might have one. I forget, but they both are in the same draft class. They're both drafted right after each other, right ahead of our New York Knicks. I'm going to lump in Zion and Ja Morant here at number 3.
I love it. Zion was my number 4.
Okay, Zion, I have no clue what's going to go on with him because you can cut him at the end of the year and not even take a financial hit whatsoever.
When
New Orleans even, like, I think I'm ready for them to move on. I'm definitely ready for them to move on. The young guys look good. I'd rather allocate that 25% of your cap somewhere else, even though you're not going to get an individual talent as good as Zion, maybe when he's on the court. You're at least going to get reliable role players that could play, help out the young guys, elevate your floor, and maybe you can look somewhere else going forward. I have no idea. Like, that, this comes down to, like, the Clippers, a team that's, like, willing to take a swing on Zion. Maybe you have a bad contract that you can match there because he's making a decent amount. So it's very tough. And then Ja's tough as well. Ja's obviously not looked great this year. It looks like the athleticism a little bit has taken a step back. Yep. The contract is large going forward, and he has a fully guaranteed contract, unlike Zion. And I think, like LaMelo, and maybe somebody else will talk about as well, I do feel like if you're trying to poach away Ja Morant, like, Memphis is probably going to ask more than maybe what the open market says he's worth.
What makes both of these situations so fascinating is what you just kind of nailed with more with New Orleans, but you could say the same thing with Memphis. How much are these teams just ready to be out of the business of these particular players? And I think that's what makes the Queen pick, for as much as that trade, you know, may go down as one of the more disastrous ones in NBA history for reasons that have nothing to do with Derek Queen. Like, at least now they have a potential new North Star where they could, you know, look at the guy who was their North Star, obviously, for years in Zion and say, okay, we can now move off of you. But just because you make that decision, like, you can't treat Zion as a salary dump, because if you were going to do that, just keep him and cut him. So you have to get something of value for him. And where is the team out there? So for me, Zion's more interesting than Ja, because I think Ja, you nailed it. The athleticism seems to be what it is right now. I'm just not making that investment unless I'm, again, maybe the Kings. I bet you there's a team out there that would like a decent organization, like a good organization would say, you know what? We're going to get him out of that situation, which, by the way, New Orleans has not proven that they could foster like real productive, long-term, high-level NBA talent ever. And just get him out of there, put him in our organization, our system. Like, this might sound insane because, again, they're probably going to go for Giannis. But like, if Miami could make the money work, is that completely out of bounds?
Like, I don't hate, like, you're right. You get him in a right organization, and what better organization to turn things around is like the Heat culture themselves and really get him under that umbrella under Spoelstra. I wonder what that would be. And Bam is spacing the four better this year. So
exactly.
You can play them out there. You can play Kalel Ware out there. The one thing that is interesting for them too, because you could honestly make a good argument they can get there financially, because they've been shopping Wiggins. I don't even know if he'd be in there, but like, they have that $26 million Rozier contract, which I don't think we know if they're allowed to trade it yet. Like, it's kind of iffy right now. I think they should be, like, my personal opinion, but I don't know what Adam Silver is going to decide on.
I would. It doesn't sound like Adam Silver knows what Adam Silver is going to decide either.
So, yeah, I think, like, if I'm a team, yeah, I think there's a couple teams, like, for New Orleans, like, for Zion, if you can get there financially. And with the emergence of Derek Queen and, like, you have Trey Murphy and Jeremiah Fears, you don't have your first-round pick. It's a sunk cost. We all know what that trade was at this point. You just kind of want to think about the next 2 to 3 years going forward. And as much as I want Zion to succeed in New Orleans, I want that fan base to have a better team to root for and a more competent organization to root for. It's just tough for me to ever see it working out in New Orleans.
I think that ship has sailed. It has to be, because that's the thing. It's like, if your organization trading for Zion, you are doing so because there was a part of you that feels like this could work. And, you know, but also confident enough in whatever you're giving up that, you know, if it doesn't work out and you do whatever it is, end up waiving him or just letting the contract expire, it's like, okay, no harm, no foul. We didn't do anything that's ultimately going to kill us too much. Maybe one other team. And again, how funny would it be if these two teams did business again? There's no Atlanta trade that makes sense, right?
For Zion, they do have the Kristaps contract that's apparently been in rumors.
They do. And some other money.
Another guy. Well, yeah, honestly, because I'm trying to think about it too. It's tough because, like, when you're maybe saying Zion's next contract or next team going forward, is he more likely to be like, I don't know, Ben Simmons, where it's just like you think it's going to work out, he has all the talent in the world, and it doesn't work out? Or I don't know if this is the best, like, comparison. Like, I guess Andrew Wiggins, in a way, like, kind of re-identified who he was going from Minnesota to Golden State and being that guy that can help you get over the hump.
Not insane, except
they're both number one picks.
He rebranded himself as a role player.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, I don't know if Zion's gonna do that.
Yeah, look, all of this is why he was three on your list. Okay, who is your number two?
Okay, number two is Trae Young. Just because, and the number one guy, which we'll get to, obviously, I think there's the best chance he gets traded. And I think just me picturing, like, okay, a trade's gonna happen, I just have no idea what the value is gonna be. But Trae Young is also another guy where I just don't know if he would get traded. I think it's going to be big for whenever he comes back. Obviously, like, they've looked good for the most part, but it's not like they have the best record in the Eastern Conference right now by any means. And Trey, it looks like, I think he's questionable for tonight, actually, it looks like. So
okay.
I think that's an upgrade. Yeah, so it says he's upgraded to questionable. I don't know if he'll play, but he's coming back soon. He didn't get off to a good 5-game start, but when you look at, like, Trae Young's career, he never really gets off to good starts. And we all know kind of, like, what he is as a player. He's a great offensive engine. He can really carry your offensive workload at times, but it's tough with the volume he gives you, at least over the last couple of years, hasn't been the most efficient. We know about the defense, and we've gone kind of backwards in terms of his success since the 2021 conference finals run, beating the Knicks and then upsetting Philadelphia. So we'll see what ends up happening with Trae Young. I think there's always, like, the Giannis thing. They have capital. They would maybe want to keep Jalen Johnson. So do you trade Trae Young? But he's a free agent at the end of the year. He's got that player option he's going to opt out of. He's going to get a long-term deal from somebody, if it's Atlanta or somebody else. So that's where I was like, I have no idea what his trade value would be, given that he could be a free agent. And the guys we talked about are under contract.
It's a great number two, not only because of him as a player, but because of the contract uncertainty. And we don't, there's obviously been reporting that those two sides were not able to come together in any meaningful way over the summer, to the extent that they had discussions. But we have no idea what Trey, for all we know, Trae Young could just be sitting there and being like, I'm a max player. And if you're not going to offer me a max contract, then I'm not signing with you. Well, I mean, what happens if nobody offers a max contract? It's exactly a different question. But again, it makes it very interesting, because is there a team out there right now that if they were like, you can have Trae Young next year, if you offer him a max contract, you might have to move some money around, you know, but like, you could have him if you're willing to offer him the max. Are we sure there's a team in the NBA that would be like, yeah, we're going to offer, like, Brooklyn's going to have a ton of money. You know, like, would they do that? I don't know that Brooklyn would do that, especially after they did what they did in the draft this past year. Mm-hmm. It's a great number two. He ultimately, believe it or not, I didn't even have him on my list, because I just think, for that reason, I think we know what his, not that we know what his trade value is, but we know it's not as high as we would have thought it was like a year ago.
No, yeah. I think this would be also a little bit more interesting too. And I think the Hawks are way too talented to fall out of it. It's a weak East, but like, I'm trying to remember where they ended up. When the Raptors kind of had their fire sale, trading OG to the Knicks and then Pascal to the Pacers. Pascal was a free agent at the end of the year, and I think OG was too with
OG
the player
was
option
as well.
Yes. It helps when what OG's agent is the GM's son. So you kind of know you have a deal under the table there. But I wonder if like a team is like, okay, we just need a kind of agreement that we could trade for Trae Young. We'll give Atlanta some type of asset, and we're willing to give them the extension, kind of with like Indiana and Siakam. The only other team I could think of is like maybe Washington. If they're saying, okay, this is going to be the last year of the rebuild, we're going to maybe move up in the lottery. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then we want to be competitive next year. Trae obviously elevates your floor. They don't really have the franchise point guard on the roster right now.
They have the money.
They have the money too, which they're going to have cap space. So that's the one team that I thought of.
That's such a this is why he's a great number two, because imagine being inside the front office when they're having the discussion, like, look, pick whichever young player on our roster we're least high. I feel bad saying this because I used to be high on this guy. Are you a Bilal Coulibaly guy?
I was more in the past. The defense is fun, but man, the offense still has so much to work on.
So like pick one of CJ or Middleton's salaries and add Coulibaly, give him one more lesser profile young player, you know, and like a future protected first or something. And like, okay, that's our offer. What's Atlanta doing?
Atlanta's like, we are going to be scared to give him $55 million or whatever it is. Washington is willing to do that because they have the cap. They have the young core in place. Is Atlanta like, okay, we might as well just take the asset. We might as well get something for him, because he can, if it was kind of like this offseason where no teams had cap and we know we can facilitate a sign and trade, but that's not the case. Like, there is a chance teams are going to have cap space and Trae could walk for nothing.
Very fascinating to see what happens. All right. You're number one.
Yeah. So it's Anthony Davis, because I think it's also why I wanted to put him at one and talk about him, because I think he's the highest probability of getting traded out of anybody we've talked about, because obviously like Nico Harrison trades for him. He's no longer there. They're underperforming this year to kind of their expectations. They're 10-17. Definitely have a chance. Like, they're not out of it yet, but you're thinking they peak this year, maybe as a seventh or an eighth seed. They walk into Oklahoma City or Denver, it's going to be a sweep regardless, or a gentleman sweep. So they're trying to, I think, accumulate some type of assets for AD. They need to see him healthy for a consistent time, kind of going back to like the Zion thing. You need to see him out there healthy, looking like he's at least somewhat of the AD they traded for last year, and just trying to picture what team, which I think he does have maybe a stronger market than maybe I realize. I just wonder, is it straight like matching salary in a way where there's like an intriguing veteran, like say it's like Toronto, it's Jakob Poeltl, or say it's like Golden State and it's like Kuminga, right? Like it's just like an intriguing matching salary coming back, or some type of contract coming back. And then we get like a first rounder, or are you getting like a really good return at this point for AD, which I'm not sure. 32 years old, injury history, making a lot of money, could be a free agent at the end of next year. That doesn't really work in Dallas's favor, I feel like.
You would think that a player that other teams could look at and pretty unequivocally say, if this guy is healthy, he will raise our championship ceiling. He is a top 15 player when healthy. He is a top five defensive center when healthy. Like, there's no question about that. You would think that there would be a team out there trying to win a championship this year, or even let's extend it to next year. Let's give a 2-year window that would say we will roll the dice. And yet, my favorite two words this year, and yet I can't find the team that is like a real team, like put the Bulls rumors aside or whatever. You know, and like the fact that I've had, you know, and AD was my number five. I'm going to give you my number one in a bit. You're going to laugh. The fact that like on multiple post game shows, I've, you know, that Cat has maybe not had a great game. I've had to deal with like different comments where it's like, would you do it? Yeah. And I'm like, man, we're really going to have that conversation. And yet I, in the back of my mind, I'm like, is it that crazy of a conversation? So that's why we're here.
It's not. I mean, if AD was like as reliable as Kat's been for the Knicks health wise, I could be on board in a way. But it's just like, I think AD maybe unlocks a little bit more for you in the playoffs come out defensively. He's not the shooter Kat is offensively, but you're going to surround four shooters most of the time, given what Josh Hart Ferentz could be. But like, you're going to have mostly shooters around Anthony Davis. It would work. I just can't trust him to stay healthy. And that's the thing that I would maybe go back on if I was a Knicks decision maker.
My number one, I want you to tell me, is this the most ridiculous thing you ever heard? Or
I'm excited.
The most ridiculous thing ever heard. It's also cheating because this player has a no trade clause. My number one is LeBron James. Mm-hmm. What is the trade value of LeBron James? If the Lakers decided tomorrow and LeBron was like, yeah, I want to be traded.
Yeah. So the thing with LeBron, I guess, like free agent at the end of the year, he is going to be 41 in 12 days.
Exactly.
He's been a fine, like 40-year-old. He's been good for 40-year-old standards. Been a little bit of a step back, like shooting the ball. The athleticism takes a dip. Once again, I just think, I wonder if it would be like the Lakers were, they would have had to be like not super competitive, maybe off to like a Warriors start this year where they're around 500. I think they're a little bit worse actually than their record shows. Kind of when you look at like the net rating stuff and the defense, I think is a glaring issue. We'll see what they end up looking like. I just think if anything you're getting back from LeBron is just matching salary. Maybe if you're giving up the 28th overall pick in the draft, wherever you are.
Conventional wisdom, I completely agree with you. LeBron James, you're getting back matching salary. And yet the reason he's number one, where it's like, wait a minute. Some team out there is like, we have to beat matching salary, and we could put LeBron James on our roster potentially for the final run of his career, a motivated LeBron James to show up everybody one final time. Like, is there someone out there that would actually give up real stuff? It's, again, I thought of it and I'm like, this is either the dumbest thing I've ever thought of or the dumbest thing I've ever thought of, somewhere in between. But I don't know. That was what my gut was telling me to do.
Yeah, no, it's interesting too. I thought maybe there was a chance like the buyout market could have been a thing for LeBron if the Lakers were completely out of it. And then it's like, okay, he can now not hinder a team's roster because, I mean, he's making $50+ million. So unless like there's not many guys out there where it's a one-for-one swap and now you're trading two rotational guys, I'm going to be fascinated because I don't think the Lakers are making it. If they make it to round two, I think that's a success this year. So LeBron, I don't think he's going to retire. So I do wonder if next year is the last year. Is it in L.A.? Is there a Cleveland reunion just on like a minimum? I don't know. Is there a New York thing? Like, I don't know, for the last year.
Speaking of New York, I do want to give my one big honorable mention to Karl Anthony Towns, which again, when we were messaging a few weeks ago, I was like, Kat has to be somewhere near the fringes of this list, only because again, he is the second most important player on a team that you would figure is going to win the East. And if the Knicks were again in a, for whatever reason, decided to make Karl Anthony Towns available for trade tomorrow, like who's knocking down their door? It's a weird situation. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And he's part of like that Anthony Davis. I think we talked about, or like Anthony Davis. Who else is in that class? It's like Jokic, Giannis, Donovan Mitchell. He could be a free agent in 2027.
Yep.
I wonder how much Kat's trade value would change between now and like June 30th, right? If they traded him in the offseason. I think just because how wide open the Knicks are, they're one like kryptonite. The Pacers are not going to be in front of them this year.
Thanks.
So
God.
I just think they're going to run this team into the playoffs. I do hope after the cup, I mean, it's getting me excited as a Knicks fan. Just like, is there like, he seems like a great vibes guy, Gershon, but it's just not gone the way that they would have hoped. I wonder if they're just like Gershon, Pacome, any first round pick on protected swap, what could we get as the best like athletic wing or somebody like that?
I have done the exercise, and if there was a way to build up enough salary, and it's not, I'm not saying it's impossible, but it'd be very difficult. If there was a way to build up enough salary for Najee Marshall, he's the one guy.
Yeah, that would be a perfect get.
It would be perfect, but unfortunately, like, as you know, they can't send out more, they can't bring in more salary than they send out. And even if you do, I think it's, I did this math, Gershon, Pacome, and like Kolek, all of a sudden is a vital member of their team.
Might have some value now.
Yeah. You're still not there. So that's a tough one. It's tough. But interesting to see what they'll do. A couple of other honorables. I just wanted to at least shout out my guy perpetually forever, Julius Randle. He has been on my all uncertain trade value team
for sure
for half a decade. Michael Porter Jr., who's like going to get traded. And you could tell me, is there a team that like gives up two firsts for Michael Porter Jr.? Or is that essentially like we're getting, you know, worse salary and one bad first? You know what I mean?
It feels like everything I've read, like he actually has positive trade value, which I don't think was the case a couple months ago. I think the Nets should be hopping all over that.
I was about to say same thing. I said the same thing. James Harden, because again, if they ever actually did it, and his teammate Kawhi Leonard, another honorable. And then the last guy that I like, I thought about getting cute and putting him on my list. I'm like, no, he's too good. He would go for a lot. But then I'm like, what would he really go for? It's Jaren Jackson Jr. I wanted to at least mention him.
Yeah, it's been a weird year for him in Memphis. They've looked better as of late. I wonder what direction they would go in. And I think he would have more trade value than Ja. So I think there's your reasoning for like, okay, we want a better return. We trade Triple J over Ja. He's just an interesting player, honestly. Like he has all the talent, the defensive potential, the 3-point shooting, but I just don't know if we're ever going to see him level up. And this is just what he is.
That's exactly where I'm at with him, which is why, again, I wanted to give him a shout out. And my prediction for if we do this episode again next year, Paolo Banchero will make the list.
I like that a ton. Cause I do wonder, where Orlando heads, does Franz and Paolo work? And it's been a weird Paolo year.
Spoiler alert, I don't think it's going to work. but they're a really scary team, so I shouldn't say anything. Matt, please do me a favor and tell everybody watching and listening where they could find you and your exceptional content.
Yeah, pretty much kind of all over the place. YouTube, Twitter, TikToks, Ross, Six Rings of Steel, my name. You can kind of look up and you'll find stuff. I've done stuff for like Enjoy Basketball this year, which has been fun, kind of under the NBC umbrella. So yeah, just talking about the NBA, enjoying this season a lot. I know there's always a lot of takes around the NBA. I've enjoyed it a lot. I do think there's going to be changes made kind of going forward in the league, but I've enjoyed this season. I think it's been a good one.
The challenge for every content creator nowadays is to make content that is interesting and accessible and exciting while also not falling into the trap of like just going for the lowest common denominator. And you are freaking nailing it, dude. It's really like exceptional. It's exceptional high level stuff for whatever it's worth for me, which whatever. Thank you so much for coming on today's episode of NBA Takedown. Everybody out there, thank you for checking out another episode of NBA Takedown. I am going to try to put out a short video of some kind on the NBA Takedown YouTube channel tomorrow. So keep an eye out for that. Probably reacting to something or other that happens around the league tonight. But on behalf of Matt Geis, I am Jonathan Macri, and we will be back with more fun and games before you know it.